case for argument this morning is Chikwanda against Mukasey. Ms. Soy.
May it please the court, my name is Abby Seif. I'm here on behalf of Betsa Chikwanda, and I'm asking this court to reverse Judge Zerbe's decision denying all relief to Betsa Chikwanda. Judge Zerbe interfered with her right to have a reasonable opportunity to be heard and to present her evidence by engaging in improper questioning and ignoring the corroborating evidence in this case. He also relied on easily explainable and immaterial inconsistencies to find her to be not credible. He completely ignored the fact that Michael Mufana was a district chairman for ZANU-PF and therefore a government agent, and he ignored the issue of the father-in-law being beaten to death by ZANU-PF for allegedly hiding Betsa after she had left.
Ms. Seif, let me begin by asking you why you attached to your reply brief this copy of what seems to be a hospital record when certainly in any legible form, this just isn't in the record. I don't see what we can do
with
this.
It is in the record, Your Honor. It's in the record on page 733. At the very bottom of the record, on page 733, is a letter from Betsa Chikwanda with the peace order and the hospital record. It was in the record. And what happened at trial was...
Is it legible?
It is not legible at the bottom of the record, no. On page, at least on my copy of the... administrative record, it's not legible. I can if you want me to present
all
it.
All right. Well, I'll look for it, and I've made note of the page.
It is not legible. But when you look at the transcript of the trial, you see on cross examination, she presents a legible copy, and I can give you the citation for that too. On the appellate record, the hospital record is mentioned in her direct testimony. She tells Judge Zerbe that she had submitted that to the court on page 130. Then on cross-examination, on page 208 through 211, she presents her copy. The court asks her, or I can't remember if the court or counsel asks her, does she have another copy of it? She says that she does. The court marks it as Exhibit 9.
And where does this wind up then? I mean,
that is a good question, Your Honor. It is not considered by the court in his decision, despite the fact that between pages 208 and 211...
You mean it's not considered by the immigration judge?
Correct. It's not considered by the immigration judge. He states that he's marking it as Exhibit 9. It's discussed on cross-examination, and yet it's not in any copy of the record that we have. It took us to go to the very bottom, page 733, to find exactly what she had testified to on direct examination, that she mailed it into the court along with a copy of the peace order. And there's a letter on page 731 of the record, dated November 17, 2005, in which she submits that to the court.
All right, so now I have another question about this record, because looking at it, it appears that it opens up on the 1st of November, then there's a second notation on the 1st of November, then there's a notation on the 2nd of November, and then there's a stamp that seems to say something about the 22nd of November. But in the meantime, the passports of both Mr. and Mrs. Chikwanda show that they're in South Africa from November 4th to the 8th. So don't we still have a fairly significant discrepancy here?
Your Honor, respectfully, I would argue no, that there's a reasonable explanation for that. When Betsa is testifying, and even in her appellate record, she testifies to the fact that she's not good with dates. But if you just look at the record and just looking at those dates, she testified that she was in the hospital, and then she had to go back for follow-up care. So it is very plausible that she was in the hospital for a few days while they examined the skull and made sure that she was okay. She was released. She went to South Africa. She came back for her follow-up and was discharged from her doctor on the 22nd. So it's not unreasonable.
So you're saying because the records only show November 1 and 2, it's actually conceivable she went down to South Africa on the 4th.
4th through the 8th. It's conceivable that she did that, yes, and then went back to see her doctor when she came back.
Impossible.
Sorry?
At least you're not trying to defy the law of physics.
Right. No, we're not trying to argue that she's in two places at the same time. And it's clear if you look at her testimony, she talks about that because the judge cross-examines her throughout this whole thing. And I would like to bring you back onto that issue of the questioning, and we'll get into that part of where she had follow-up care. On page 116 of the record, and I'm going to actually waste my time reading it to you because it is so important. The judge just uses as the linchpin of his argument the fact that she can't get the date that she testified that it was the summer of 2000 during her testimony. And then he uses that for the rest of his decision for why she is not credible, because she's inconsistent with her visa, she's inconsistent with her husband and her prior asylum, all because of the summer 2000. Well, when you look at how the summer 2000, for the first time ever, comes out, it becomes very clear that it is not reliable evidence because it came about because of improper questioning. And I'm going to waste my time reading it to you. On page 116, question from the court. All right, well, have you ever been physically mistreated at any time in Zimbabwe? Yes, Your Honor. When was the first time? In 2000. The first time you were in any way physically abused was in 2000. Yes, Your Honor. Could you remember the month and the day? Answer, no, Your Honor. Beginning, middle, or end of the year? No, Your Honor. Beginning would be January, February, March. The middle be June, July, or August. I can say the middle. Question, the middle. Uh-huh. Okay, that would be the summer in Zimbabwe or the winter. I guess the seasons are opposite. It would be the winter in Zimbabwe, wouldn't it? It's in the southern hemisphere. I think the summer. Well, all right. Well, what happened to you then? Answer, well, Michael Mafonda came to my house with a group of ZANU-PF youths. He wanted, and she starts to tell her story. He interrupts her. But he holds her to the summer of 2000 from that testimony on through. And I'll show you.
Do you think he thinks the summer of 2000 is July, or does he think the summer of 2000 is November?
No, he's saying July, August, and I'll tell you.
Well, I'm just asking you because he mentions the hemispheric
right.
point.
He's
and
saying
so
July,
summer
he's,
might be November.
No, he assumes, as you're correctly saying, because of the hemisphere thing, he assumes July, August, and you can read it throughout the transcript where he does it. I'll show you on page 128. And this is on the hospital thing. So you're speaking from reasonable certainty, are you? Answer, yes, Your Honor. Then you were hospitalized. Do you know either the date that you went to the hospital or the date that you left the hospital? Answer, I can't remember. He should have stopped right there and refreshed recollection. He had her asylum application that he had her sign right before. It's Rule 612, and I understand that the rules of evidence do not apply, but a fair hearing is required. And the purpose behind Rule 612 is to avoid exactly what happened here. What happens? I can't remember. Question from the court. But this was the summer of 2000. Yes, Your Honor. Somewhere in June, July, and August of 2000, correct? Somewhere there. And if you go through the record, every time a date comes up, this is what he does. He does a guessing game with the alien and refuses to allow them, or for whatever reason, does not allow them to refresh recollection. This unreliable evidence would have never happened if he took out the asylum application that he had her sign and swear to 5 minutes before, let her read it, take it back, and re-ask the question. But that's not what he did. Just like in Cadia, he created the inconsistency, and then he held her to it throughout cross-examination.
I'm puzzled. Mm-hmm. Often one way to test credibility is to see whether people tell the same story on different occasions. You seem to be saying that it's a violation of the rules to do that, because every time a witness testifies, the officer, or presumably the lawyer, has to give the witness the prior statement so that the inconsistencies can never be brought out. Isn't that just you're taking, it seems to me, serious issue with normal means of testing credibility?
I respectfully disagree. That's not the argument, Your Honor. What I am arguing is that when you get the answer, I do not remember.
That was exactly, however, what you just said, that the immigration judge was required to show the alien her prior statement so that she could repeat the same dates.
When she testified that she did not remember the date, when she testified that she did not remember, she should be allowed to refresh her recollection. That's where there's a rule, 612, that allows for that.
It's exactly what I'm saying. So your argument is that one cannot test whether a statement is true or is just parroting back what had been fed to one earlier by requiring them to restate the position on the stand.
Respectfully, he can ask it a separate time, come back later, re-question, just like a normal attorney would have to do. But if a normal attorney is doing direct examination and he's either asked or answered the question before or has been given the answer, I do not remember, he is to refresh recollection or move on, not play a guessing game with the alien. At this point, I'm apparently out of time, Your Honor, so I'm going to save the rest for rebuttal.
Thank you, counsel. Ms. Nyberg.
May it please the Court. My name is Rebecca Nyberg. I represent the Attorney General, Michael Mukasey, in this matter. First of all, I wanted to go to counsel's opening statement. She didn't tend to elaborate too much upon based on the questioning of this court, but she seems to be raising a due process argument now for the first time. There's nothing in her brief. There's nothing in the brief to the board that ever raises any sort of due process argument about improper questioning. And we would submit that the questioning that occurred was extremely respectful and was exactly what the immigration judge was meant to do.
I must say, I don't understand what counsel is relying on Rule 612 for. Because what 612 says is that if a writing is used to refresh a witness's recollection, the other side is entitled to a copy of it. It doesn't say that every time a witness professes uncertainty, the witness must be given a writing to refresh her recollection.
Indeed, Your Honor. And I was furiously flipping through the record, and unfortunately there's just too many pages of testimony for me to find. But I do recall in the annals of my memory that she was asked about the date that is included in her asylum application, which was that this incident occurred on November 1st.
Which apparently is about when it occurred. I mean, it strikes me from what Ms. Seif just read that there's some serious ambiguity. If you say to somebody who lives in Zimbabwe, did it happen in the summer? And they say, I think so. But actually summer is, in that region of the world, November, December, January, February. And then you say, aha, it happened in July, which from her subjective point of view would be winter. Not Chicago-style winter, but winter nonetheless. There's some pretty serious ambiguity in the record.
Well, Your Honor, even
everything else suggests it's November 1st, or her husband thinks it's the 28th. People come up with all these different November dates.
Well, Your Honor, even taking the testimony and the evidence outside of her testimony, even arguendo assuming that her memory is terrible and she can't remember dates, there's nothing in this record that proves when it occurred or if it occurred. Even if looking
at... What are we going to do with this medical record? That's why I asked
that's
about
exactly
it.
What I was getting to, Your Honor. If you look at the second page of that medical record, there's a DOA date of admission of November 1st and a date of, I'm not sure if it's departure or dismissal. Or
probably discharge.
Discharge. Is of November 22nd. And as Your Honor mentioned, there are stamps in the passports that indicate that Ms. Chikwanda and her husband were on vacation in South Africa from November 4th through November 8th.
But the interesting thing about that, I mean, it seems to me at a minimum it might need further exploration, because normally you would not be in a hospital from the 2nd of November all the way to the 22nd with zero notations in the chart. So it could well be that what Ms. Seif said is true, that she was there for a couple of days, they released her, they said come back, she went and did whatever she did, she came back, they discharged her officially from their care on the 22nd and give her this stamped. I mean, I don't know, but I don't see that there's a necessary inconsistency. And this certainly seems to suggest that she was raped.
Well, these dates also are a complete discrepancy with other aspects of her testimony, including the fact that her husband was away at that time. Well, her husband on November 1st was home from his peacekeeping mission. So he would have been in the country, presumably living at the house.
But we don't know that. He could have been not in the house and in Zimbabwe, presumably.
Well, they both testified that he returned home upon his peacekeeping mission.
I understand that, we all have family members who are home in some grand sense of the term, but who have gone to visit a friend or buying groceries or whatever they're doing.
Even accepting that as true, he testified that he was out of the country at that time. And she repeatedly says, my memory is terrible. Please rely on my husband's. His is much better. So even discounting her testimony, what's being presented here is a complete discrepancy between what he testified as well. As Your Honors are well aware, the standard here is not if we could find something, but whether the record evidence compels a different finding from what the agency found. And here there's nothing that compels. I mean, we could read it any number of different ways.
I have the same point to make to you about this case that I made about the other one. I mean, you are placing your all on the fact that this event never happened. This is a tough record to say that on. So, you know, you could be sending this Chikwanda back to something pretty awful.
Your Honor, that's always a risk that the agency and the Department of Justice takes.
live with it.
Unfortunately, there's nothing that I personally can do.
So what about this? I mean, if this medical record is correct and if we can look at it, and I'm not sure about either of those, I hasten to add, it's pretty hard to say nothing ever happened.
Well, Your Honor, and I mean, you start getting far afield from what the immigration judge and the BIA says, but there's a lot of inconsistencies here that go to other aspects of her claim, not just if it happened, but why it happened.
Well,
one of the grounds?
Given the traumatic nature of the event that she describes, and particularly in view of her status as a pro se litigant, was Judge Zerbe obliged to consider the possibility that post-traumatic stress disorder might explain the inconsistencies in her testimony?
Your Honor, the immigration judge in this case gave her all the deference in the world.
We know the immigration judge in this case very well, and I'm sure you do too.
Well, he did give her all the deference in the world, and he did take into that consideration. And discounting her testimony, there's still nothing in this record that compels a different conclusion. She says, rely upon my husband. And, of course, we're assuming that she even has these problems. She never presented any sort of medical evidence that she had post-traumatic stress disorder, that she had memory problems. She testified that she was not under a doctor's care for any of these things. So even, you know, discounting her testimony, assuming that she is suffering from these, you know, untreated illnesses, what we're looking at here is other evidence in the record, that being her husband's testimony and the record evidence, and there's simply nothing here that compels the conclusion that she was raped on the 1st of November, on the 28th of November, in July. Who was there? Was her husband there? Was her husband not there? She says in her personal statement that she was raped in front of her husband. She says in her testimony that was incorrect. She can't remember who actually did the raping. Was it just the former common law husband? Was she gang raped? That's a major discrepancy.
Well,
I mean, you may be able to excuse certain dates. Okay, you know, I don't really remember. But who was there? How many people actually raped you? Those are pretty significant.
Do you have any social science evidence to show that rape victims normally remember those kinds of things with the clarity you're assuming? There have been a lot of studies of rape in this country.
Well, Your Honor,
she wouldn't have just sort of blurred and tried to tune out and pay no attention.
And it may have been a completely different case if she had said from the very beginning, I really don't remember who was there. I know this group came in. I don't remember who raped me. But that's not what she said. She said at one time, I was gang raped. She said at another time, no, the bunch of youths were in the other room or were outside or somewhere else, and it was just this ex-husband. I mean, so she presents different stories. It's not that she's saying, I don't remember, I don't remember, I don't remember, I'm really sorry, I don't have these details. She's actually presenting different stories here. And she can't, I mean, you know, like I said, it seems that it might be reasonable, given the situation in Zimbabwe, that she may not remember which exact date it was. But there are certain big elements where if she's going to put forth a story, it must be consistent.
Are we actually sending people to Zimbabwe today?
Your Honor, I spoke with the Chicago Immigration Customs Enforcement, ICE, this morning, and they said that we are repatriating to Zimbabwe at this point.
Wow. That is really hard to believe. You can open up the travel section of the Chicago Tribune yesterday and see that no one is to go to Zimbabwe. The idea that we would put someone on a plane to Zimbabwe is really phenomenal.
Your Honor, I'm sorry, that's simply outside of my control. That's something that...
Believe me, I understand.
That's something that the Department of Homeland Security and ICE has
My horror is not directed at you. It is directed at those far above you.
Well, and that's why I called this morning.
Ms. Chikwanda's current status?
What is
her current status? She had a reporting date of May 27. We stayed her removal. What's her current status?
She's got a stay pending removal until this court makes its decision. She won't be removed.
Pardon?
until this court makes its decision.
No, our order made it clear that she had to report to custody, and whether she would be released on bail is up to the agency. So my question is, what happened?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I don't know whether
she was. Was she released on bail?
I don't know. Perhaps opposing counsel might be better suited to answer that. That's not something that I did check on.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anything further, counsel? You can begin with my question. What's her current status?
The current status, Your Honor, is we gave her the explanation. We told her that she needed to be there on the 27th, and as far as I know, she went, but I've had no contact with her, so I don't know what happened at that hearing.
Would one or the other or both of you file a report telling us what her status is? Did she report? Of course, if she didn't report, she's a fugitive from justice, and this case will be dismissed. If she did report, has she been bailed or is she being held in custody?
We have been attempting to find that out, and we will continue and give this court a report. On your issue, Your Honor, of the federal rules of evidence, I'm going to cite you to United States versus Shoup, which is actually a Sixth Circuit decision, as the closest one I could find, which talks about it, says, and it cites to Weinstein's Federal Rules of Evidence 612. It says, upon establishing the proper foundation, counsel will typically offer the witness the writing to inspect and will show a copy of the writing to opposing parties, citing to Weinstein's Federal Rules of Evidence.
Yes, and then if you want to get the writing into evidence, that's how you do it. It's a completely different question from, is it obligatory to help a witness?
Well, and I will concede, Your Honor, that the rule doesn't even necessarily apply, but the purpose, the meaning behind it is there, and that is to refresh recollection.
Right.
Moving on to
Thank you very much, counsel. Case is taken under advisement.